The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
It does. It settles in your soul. It does. Morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa and Wynn Carpenter. How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
I'm good. First day of my new tongue.
Are you bright-eyed and bushy-tailed?
Yeah, it was late last night, wasn't it, guys?
It was. It was fun, though.
Anyway, Jared, we have Jared at the helm. How are you, brother?
I'm doing well.
Good. Good, good.
It's been a while since I've worked a Sunday.
Yeah. How'd they finagle you into this, buddy?
What, do you have banker's hours?
Yeah, no, everybody just seemed to have gone out of town or just otherwise engaged, so.
They heard I was coming. Is that it?
No, they like you.
We are here broadcasting live from downtown Reading in KCNR Studios, 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, 1460 AM, your talk radio. We're streaming live at KCNR1460.com, and we are archived forever and ever. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Yes, and we are here with Chris Kellstrom, who is running for District 5 Supervisor. Chris, you know, this is really going to be a monumental race. And I think the first thing we really want to get into, quickly on your background, give us a little bit of your background. It's sort of something we do all the time, but I think most people that have heard this show and have heard a lot of the interviews that have been done pretty much know what people have done and who they are.
Yeah.
Shoot away, brother.
I've been around. I think the audience knows me pretty well here. So, yeah, born and raised right here in Shasta County. Went to the local schools, graduated Enterprise after playing basketball for them. Played basketball at Shasta College 1 year. Got a job in the grocery store as in high school. I mean, before that, I had a paper out for 4 years. Before that, I was the kid in the neighborhood that mowed the lawns and raked the leaves and babysat and whatever I could do. So I think I've been working since, I don't know, I was 10. Nine, something like that. But anyhow, haven't stopped yet. Started managing a store in Anderson in 1987 at the ripe old age of 19.
Wow.
Moved to Cottonwood in 88. Did grocery management for years. Moved down south for about a decade. Ex-wife's school, put her through school. Got kind of, you know, one thing led to another. Had a great job down there. She couldn't find work up here for her career well enough to move back. So one thing led to another, spent 10 years down there. Finally, when we had our daughter, put the house up for sale and is like, we're not going to buy another house down here. We're moving. We're going back home. So got back home, built a house in Cottonwood in 2001. I'm still there. So last store I managed was, out in Happy Valley, in 2001. And then I got out of the grocery management business, basically went into the customer service business, into sales, and I've been kind of doing that ever since. So, background is basically business management and customer service. That's kind of what I do. That's my thing. So I want to bring those both of those to Shasta County. I think that we need a little bit more business management style there. As far as, you know, in a grocery store, you have departments, department heads, you have, you know, specialized staff. Sure. I mean, it's kind of very similar. I never had a $600 million budget to work with in a grocery store. I also never had baseline budgeting. So in a grocery store at the end of the year, we didn't say, hey, how much have we got in the bakery department? Hey, let's spend it all so we can get it next year. That's not how things work in the real world, but that's how things work in the county. So
what was it that really prompted you to say, hey, I'm going to run for supervisor for District 5? And before you answer that, can you give us a layout of where District 5 is?
Yeah, District 5's gotten easier now. It used to be like parts of Churn Creek Bottom and parts of Millville and all this. Now it's real simple. It's basically Anderson, Cottonwood, Shingletown, and now Happy Valley. They moved Happy Valley into the district recently, so works out well for me. I mean, I lost some friends in Churn Creek Bottom. I lost some friends in Southeast Reading, and I, you know, that were constituents, and I lost some people in Millville. But I gained a whole bunch of people in Happy Valley. So I know quite a few people out there. It's been kind of nice going back out there and meeting people again. They have a major water issue going on there like everybody else does, but theirs is kind of more people, well, they're in the middle of a drought, but I think some people misrunning their district really caused more problems than just the drought. So they have a mess out there. I've been going out to the water meetings out there, and it's kind of cool. I was at the water meeting here not too long ago, and again, being from here, living here my entire, you know, or all entire life except for the one decade I spent down in Sacramento County. Yeah, I'm at the water board meeting, and there's a lady that hadn't been there before, and she's kind of looking at me, and I'm, you know, she looked a little bit familiar, but I don't know. I know a lot of people, and maybe I ran into her in the store when I managed it out there. Well, afterwards, she comes up to me, and we had worked together at Riverview Market on Bocelli Lane in 1986 or five or something, you know, so it was kind of cool. I've been running into people like that all the time. As I'm on the campaign trail, I run into people I haven't seen in 30 years, 35 years, so it's kind of cool, yeah.
What was the thing that really triggered you to say, hey, I've got to run, I've got to do something?
Yeah, so my first insight into politics, or the first look into politics, is quite frankly, when I was in my 20s and 30s, and, you know, I thought I was doing my civic duty. I voted religiously for sure. You know, I thought I knew what I was doing. I would read the statements, and I would look at certain people that were, you know, maybe the NRA might endorse somebody or give a grading. And when it came to local politics, I mean, I really didn't know who I was voting for. I didn't go to the city council meetings down in Galt, and I didn't go to the board meetings, the county board meetings, or anything else in Sacramento County. So, you know, I noticed that I would vote for names I recognized. Well, it wasn't until in Galt it actually affected me. And what happened there is we had bought our first home down there, big empty field next to our house. And I said, hey, what's going to go in that field? And, you know, the developers that were selling the houses, they said, oh, it's just R1. It's more single-family residential. I said, oh, is it, you know, is it better than Compton homes like ours? Oh, it might be. I don't know. You know, okay, well, we buy our house. And we're in there for about a year, and all the houses in the neighborhood sell. And suddenly that field next door to me is rezoned R3 by the city council, low-income triplexes. They've gotten a government grant to put in more affordable housing. Now, I'm not against more affordable housing by any means, but maybe you could spring that on the people first. You let think? Them know. Yeah. So, of course, the entire neighborhood's up in arms, and they all go to the city council meeting. So that was my first city council meeting down in Galt. I go into a city council meeting, and we're all there to speak, and I realized then, it's like these people, they've already taken the money, they've already done the plan, they were just waiting for you all to buy your houses at full market value so that you'd pay for full market value in taxes the rest of your life, and then they were going to spring it on you that, by the way, you know, we didn't want to tell you this before you paid full market value for your house because you wouldn't have done that. So literally the for sale signs went up and down the street like dominoes. I mean, everybody on my street put their house up for sale. Everybody behind me put their house up for sale. And at that point, I was like, it ended up being a good thing because at that point, it's like, hey, we're going to put our house up for sale like everybody else. And if we are, I'm not buying another house down here. Let's get back home. You know, we'll find a way to make it home. Let's just get home and, you know, get out of this rat race down here. So then when I came home, you know, as things were progressing along and moving along, I'm like starting to notice that my Shasta County that I grew up in and loved was starting to look kind of like the Sacramento County that I couldn't wait to get out of. I mean, the homeless, the crime, the, you know, it was just getting worse and worse. And I started noticing, you know, then I started going to some of the city council meetings in Anderson. I started going to some of the board meetings when I could. Most of them I can't go to because I work. But, you know, I just started noticing kind of the same thing. It seems like some of the people in charge cared more about themselves than they did about their constituents. I also noticed about every 3.5 years, boy, all of a sudden they really cared. 6 months before an election, they were all over things. Man, they were going to fix everything. Don't worry, they got your back. They're going to fix all these problems. And then, you know, day after election, they disappeared for 3.5 more years. And so that kind of went on, and my supervisor, Les Baugh, 7 years ago, as both of you will well remember, kind of made me a little upset, as he did an entire movement at the time, the Jefferson Movement. And I thought, you know, I'm if nobody else runs against this guy, I'm going to run against this guy. I'm going to do it. So that's when I really started first kicking around that I might go into politics. Melissa Hunt stepped forward about 4 years ago, and she's a friend of mine, and she's on Anderson City Council, and I'm thinking, okay, good. You know, maybe you can do it. I don't have to. And, you know, you're a good person. I really like you. So let's see what happens. So I helped her. I mean, I didn't help her a ton. I mean, she knocked on 6,000 doors.
Yeah.
You know, I helped her put up some signs, and I think I was quoted in her voter guide and stuff, you know, and I supported her wholeheartedly. And she didn't quite make it. So that was, you know, about a year later, I'm thinking, okay, I'm just going to do it myself. I'm just going to do it myself. So, you know, talk to a few people, and they encouraged me to do it. So here I am.
You know, you've brought up some pretty interesting things you want to do. One of the things is term limits,
mm-hmm.
which I find interesting. But you were just talking, we were just talking about different, the water issues, et cetera. You want to get into those things that you'd like to change, how you'd like to change them, and what it is exactly that you see as the priority right now for the county.
Yeah, well, I mean, water is a huge one. You know, unfortunately, I can't make it rain. You know, we are taking out small reservoirs all over the place, which drives me crazy. Killark Reservoir up in Whitmore, in the Whitmore area. My kids grew up fishing there. I mean, I used to take my kids there from the time they were very little and, you know, went fishing there. It was our place to go. I mean, it's just a beautiful little reservoir up in the mountains. It supplied water to a powerhouse that had been there for 100 years that my understanding was enough power to supply like 6,000 homes. Been there 100 years. The waste product is water, clean water coming out of the turbines. But in California, water is not considered, hydroelectric is not considered clean energy.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It is absolutely crazy. So they're pulling out, you know, little small power plants after small power plants. There was another one up above the Coleman Fish Hatchery. Yeah. Years before that, they pulled out. So the Coleman 4 Bay used to feed that. And again, clean water came out and went through the fish hatchery down the creek and into the river. They're pulling out these small reservoirs everywhere. Now, those aren't going to solve our drought problems by any means. I'm not pretending they are, but it's just crazy that they're doing this.
Right.
So in the meantime, we're dumping water out of Shasta Lake. I mean, we were all up there on the protest, what was that, 2014?
Yeah.
I believe. And they were dumping, millions and millions of gallons of water out of the lake for a fish downstream. Okay, I'm all for fish. I like fish as much as the next guy. You know, I'm a fisherman. I mean, like I say, my kids grew up fishing on Killark Reservoir. I love fish. Fish are great. Fish need to be below our needs, though. I'm sorry. It's just the way it needs to be. So the Delta Smelt have found a really good lawyer, apparently somewhere along the line, and now they've moved the Delta Smelt up above ranchers and farmers and citizens of Shasta County. I think we need to find a better lawyer and move the fish back down the ladder to where, you know, the ranchers and farmers get the water first. If there's a drought year, let's not, you know, dump tons of water down the stinking river and drain our lake because we want cold water for the fish. And what's crazy is I've talked to quite a few people, and before Shasta Dam was there, I mean, there was times in the summertime when there was no control back there that you could literally walk across the Sacramento River. It was so low and so, you know, warm and so low that you could walk all the way across the river.
Yeah.
And it's like, and the fish still survived back then. 100 years ago, we still had fish. So I don't understand how now we've got a lake where we actually have better water sources. The river's always got water in it. I mean, sometimes it's lower than other times. Sometimes it's flood stage. But back before when the thing would dry up, the fish still survive. So let's just use some common sense and start saving some of that water for ranchers and farmers.
You were talking about an ordinance, the possibility of an ordinance. Would that apply to water or just?
Well, the ordinance I was talking about actually was wildfires.
Wildfires,
so
right.
The show just before ours, I mean, it was great. I kind of wanted to be in here listening to them or in here talking with them because I talked to one of the gentlemen, Roger, that was in here. I talked to him on the phone here not too long ago, and he had said in Trinity County they did it. They had done exactly what I want to do. I want to write an ordinance to limit the metric tons per fire load on our forest floors, on our national forest floors. I don't want to impact, you know, little old Mrs. Johnson, Widow Johnson, who, you know, has 3 trees down on her property, and we're going to have a county code enforcement go out there and red tag her property. I don't want to burden the private citizens. But I think we have a huge problem in our national forest. I don't think they're being managed wisely. And my understanding, if we write a county ordinance, then those lands within our county that the federal government manages, they will try to curtail their management plan into our county ordinance to comply with our county ordinance. So we need to write a county ordinance to limit the fuel loads on those federal lands. And, you know, my point is, hey, let's get the federal government to start paying to take care of the lands, which are our lands, by the way. Though we own those lands.
Right.
The federal government doesn't.
No, they manage.
They manage the lands. And right now, my beliefs, they're not managing them very well. So we need to make them manage them well, or we need to take them back, one way or the other. You either need to manage your lands. If you're not managing, I mean, you know, it's kind of like if you have a rental home and you have somebody managing it,
right,
and they're just running it into the ground, well, are you going to just continue to let that happen, or are you going to say, okay, we've hired you to manage these lands. You're not managing this house very well, so we're going to take it back from you and find somebody else that will manage it. So I think we can work with the federal government. And my point is, let's get the federal government to spend some dollars cleaning up their lands so that we don't have these catastrophic wildfires, rather than having a catastrophic wildfire and then going and begging for federal dollars because we have a natural disaster now. You know,
it's odd that a lot of people that have been in office and supervisors haven't gone for an ordinance, because in the California Constitution, Article 11 clearly gives the counties jurisdiction to make ordinances like you're talking about. Now, the other thing that I was interested in is you mentioned term limits, and I think that, you know, I'm normally not for those, but we sure have a lot of appointments.
Yeah, we have a ton of appointments. Yeah, and I mean, and you know, my thoughts on the Board of Supervisors, I'm not doing this because I need a job for the next 20 years. I'm doing this quite simply because I feel it's my civic duty to go forward, try to bring, you know, my thoughts and plans and implement some ideas into the county. And then I'm going, you know, if I can't get it done in one term, I'll go for a second term. But after the second term, if I haven't done it in 8 years, I was the wrong guy for the job. Let me get out of the way and let somebody else give it a hand, you know, give it a shot. Because I just think it should be your civic duty, not a 20-year career path.
I agree. And I think that needs to happen. But also, too, the voters need to be engaged. So, and that is the natural process for term limits right there. You know, vote them out. If they're not doing what they need to do, vote them out. Or do a recall.
It'll give one of those be successful. It'll give a sense of urgency, too. I mean, if I know I'm only got 8 years in there, you know, I mean, right now it kind of seems like 3.5 years, oh, hey, I'm going to do all this stuff, you know, right before an election. I'm going to get all this stuff done. And then 3.5 years later, or, you know, the next 3.5 years after the election, no hurry. There's really no hurry in doing anything, you know. And then right before the election again, oh, boy, I'm going to get all this stuff done. And it's like, if I know that this is my last term, hey, let's get some things done because I'm not going to be here anymore. You know?
Well, it's like they don't have the will of the people and the responsibility to the people of the county in mind.
Right.
They are in their greasing their palms, doing whatever they're doing to line their pockets and do all that other stuff, however they're manipulating the system to their own personal benefit.
Yeah, we were talking about the obvious wagon wheel of justice the other day, and it's kind of like, you know.
Are you talking about the Johnson wheel?
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I a great idea, man, that'd be awesome. It's going to take 12 years for it ever to get off the ground and get working, if it ever does, and probably $500 million.
Yeah.
But I almost wonder, they've had 2 years now. It's been 2 years. Why haven't they started on it? Why haven't, you know, all of a sudden before an election, hey, here's my plan. Here's what it's going to look like. Isn't this great? This is going to be awesome. Okay. When are you breaking ground? When are you going to find the ground?
That's why the current CAO was hired, according to reports.
And how long ago was he hired?
According to the Board of Supervisors. That's what they said.
That's what they said.
And wasn't that 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you've had 2 years.
At least 2 years.
So why is it now, the month before an election, suddenly, here's the plan. Look, we've got this thing drawn up. This is what we're going to do. Well, what happened the last 2 years?
Well, the problem with the plan is that they don't know how much money it's going to cost. They used $150 million, and that figure is based upon prices a month ago, and who knows what the cost of construction will be. They don't know how long it'll take. They haven't got the land for it yet, but they're ready to roll. Now, I know that the sheriff, Sheriff Johnson, had made the comment that he wanted to build the whole thing at once because there was another plan. The plan was to take, if you're going to do the wheel, take it and do a spoke at a time. One spoke to where you can start locking some people up. And then the idea of using the old jail as a holding tank for people awaiting trial, and then using the old courthouse to put some more beds in. So, but nobody's talking about doing anything right now. Where would you be with all that?
You know, we have a whole bunch of land available over in the last government boondoggle we had at the Stillwater Business Park. I don't think there's anything over there yet, and there's a bunch of bare land. So how about we put a very simple set of jail cells over there, modulars is what we talked about last night. It was another kind of a modular system. So let's get 100 beds over there, and then let's add on, and then add on some more. And I mean, eventually, yeah, I'm all for getting some mental health services in there. Absolutely, I'm there for getting some drug rehab services in there. I'm all for that. But right now, our current problem is getting some people off the streets and stopping some of this crime. Get those beds built. Get a simple holding cell built. 100 beds, 150 beds, whatever we can do. Add on as we get the money, add on as we go along, get the mental health services in there, get the other, you know, we have $300 million goes to Health and Human Services. Mm-hmm. We can use them to offer some of this help in the jail. But the number one problem right now is getting some people off the streets, stopping some of this crime.
Well, when you have the repeat offenders that are constantly doing this, my son's in law enforcement here locally, and a couple of weeks ago, he took a guy in. Got him booked, got him going, doing all the paperwork that he was doing, and they were the jail was processing him. My son pulls out of the jail with his cop car, pulling out, and the guy he arrested is on the sidewalk, asks him for a ride back to where he got him. It's like, are you effing kidding me?
Yeah, you can't.
That's how that worked.
Yeah,
and
I know.
My son said, you know, you just shake your head and wonder, is like, what the heck is going on?
Can't make it up.
And he can't be the only one that's been experiencing
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. And what kind of a lesson did that guy make? I mean, he obviously did something bad enough for your son to arrest him. So what lesson did he learn? Absolutely none. That, you know, it's a long walk back to Anderson
exactly.
if I can't get a ride back with the cop that just arrested me.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
It's ridiculous. And I mean, we laugh, but it's really not funny. I mean, this goes on and on and on. And it's, I mean, you know, one of my neighbors had somebody break into his house. Obviously on drugs, the guy called the cops on himself because he was hallucinating and decided that the propane tank out in the yard was a dinosaur or a monster of some kind that was coming after him. So he locked himself in the bathroom and called 911. This is a guy that burglarized the house, broke into the house. So now he's in the house and he calls 911 that the propane tank is a monster and it's coming to get him. He needs the cops there to save him. So the cops show up and of course my neighbor gets home and da 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 da. And they get this guy obviously under the influence of some severe drugs and out of his house And then they want to come to him with the whole process of, you know, coming into court and testifying against. And he says, what's the chance of this guy doing any time? And they basically told him, honestly, none. You know, he broke into your house, but I mean, he, you know, didn't steal over $950 worth of stuff. So he's not going to do any time. And he says, well, then why waste my time? You know, I'm going to have to take a day off from work and go down and testify and do all this other stuff. And he says, why even waste my time? So no charges are brought against the guy.
Well, you know, the real elephant in the room with all of that is the fact that our current police chief and our current sheriff both agreed that there's approximately 500 people that keep getting rearrested. There's the magical 500. And with those 500 people, if there was a place to lock them up, that would probably solve about 70% of the drug problems we have in the county. Now, if that 70% of the drugs start to dry up a little bit, now you have a situation to where you've got, we have a caller. Hang on, Rich. You have about 70% of the drugs off the street. That helps the homeless problem since most people on that are homeless are on drugs. So I think maybe removing that first 500 would be something everybody wants in law enforcement. It doesn't seem like any supervisor seems to hear that.
And I think you actually would increase your, increase the rate of success, so to speak, reduce the what's the word? Anyways, I think that if you can offer them some drug help after they've served 30 days and have it out of their systems, they may be more susceptible to taking that help. I actually have talked to a pastor here locally that works with a lot of the homeless, a lot of transients and stuff. And, I mean, he welcomes them into his church, and he doesn't require that they become clean, but, of course, he tries to get them clean, you know, but he offers them help first. And he told me, he goes, it may surprise you as a pastor. He says, I am all for a 30-day jail sentence. He goes, you get these guys into jail, get it out of their system, get them cleaned up. And he says, and then offer them help when they have a clear mind, offer them help. He says, they're going to be more, you know, you're going to be more successful offering them help when they have a clear mind. Right now, the guy that, you know, when his son arrested and immediately he's booked and out on the street and walking back out, well, he didn't get any help. There was no help offered to him. He didn't get any help. I mean, he wasn't there long enough to get any help. Now, I don't know whether he was on drugs or not. I have no idea, but
if he's
breaking into stuff to feed a drug habit, you know, that's a lot of the problem right now. Well, you've got to incarcerate them for a while and then offer them help after it gets out of their system. So,
Yeah, Richard, we're going to have to go to our break. Do you want to hold on there, brother?
Yes, always.
Okay, sounds good. All righty, then. With that, we'll go off to our first break. We're with Chris Kallstrom, running for District 5 Supervisor of Shasta County. Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
East of Omaha, you can listen to the engine moaning out his one note song. You can think about the woman or the girl you knew the night before. But your thoughts will soon be wandering the way they always do when you're riding 16 hours and there's nothing much to do.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today, or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
This is your Mortgage Minute, brought to you by Mortgage Matt with Megastar Financial.
Hey, Mortgage Matt here with Megastar Financial. Now is an amazing time to buy. Interest rates have been lower than they have ever been, but the thing that's different about this refinance boom is house prices are up and they're continuing to appreciate. For every 1% that interest rates go down, you qualify for 10% more on your buying power. In the midst of this digital age, there is still great value in having a person that can hear about your situation and come up with the best mortgage plan, loan type for your particular circumstance. There is great value in meeting with a lender who is local that you can meet with face-to-face. Please feel free to give me a call. I'd love to set up a time to meet and figure out the best game plan for your situation.
To learn more about your home buying options, contact Mortgage Matt. Call 999-9000, Megastar Financial, America's most trusted mortgage lender. NMLS 1162668.
You know I need your love. Long as I got your love, you know that I'll never leave. When I wanted you to share my life, I had no doubt in my mind. And it's been you.
We're back.
We're back.
We are. Have a quick announcement here. This coming Tuesday night, May the 3rd at 6 o'clock at the room at the library, the conference room at the library, there will be a debate between, is it Julie Flores, right?
Judy Flores.
And Brian Caples. They're running for superintendent of schools of Shasta County. There'll be a debate there, so you may want to show up. 6 o'clock. Probably fits about 100, 120 people, I'm guessing there. So,
is it going to be an actual debate or is it going to be another forum? People have to understand the
Well,
difference.
They called it a debate on the flyer, and I think it's going to be a forum because what will happen is they'll have questions coming in from the audience on a 3x5 card. Then the League of Women Voters select the questions that they want to ask the candidates, and they ask the candidates the same question. But I think they form it as like a forum and a debate because if there is an opinion made on the question, the other person can debate the opinion of the other person. So I guess it's a debate.
Okay.
Forum debate.
Okay.
You know,
we need to have debates.
Debate them. Anyway, we are here with Chris Kallstrom. He's running for Board of Supervisors, District 5, and we do have Richard on the line. Richard, what say you, sir?
Hey, good morning. I'd like to know what Chris plans on doing with
realigning and reforming our county budget. I have a couple of ideas. Over 1,000 employees in public health seems a little excessive. And then I recently sent out a document last week. The county's paying private security $6.2 million for a five-year contract for private security for county facilities. Sounds a little excessive. Let's reduce that maybe to $100,000 per year. That will give us $5.5 million to put in other places. So that's all I got. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, obviously, I do have a copy of the county budget at home. It's in a big, giant three-ring binder. It's several hundreds of pages, and you're going through there, and you're looking at some of the budgets that have just jumped an astronomical amount, and it's like our population's gone up 10,000, and our budget has doubled. So,
yeah,
you know, our population has gone up 5%, and the budget has doubled. So
50%.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I've gone through there. Obviously I wasn't on the board when they passed it. I didn't have an opportunity to ask, any of the department heads why such a huge increase was necessary. And ironically, nobody else on the board bothered to ask them that either. They passed the budget 4-1, I believe, and without any department heads being brought in, any questions, I mean, it was just rubber stamped and passed. That will not happen if I'm on the board, for sure. I will have every department head in there explaining why, what they did with the money last year, what they're going to do with the money this year, why they need an increase, you know, why they need an increase from the previous years. I mean, I definitely will not be rubber stamping a $600 million budget without looking at it in there. So I know Health and Human Services does have a ton of money.
Oh boy.
I know at one of the little forums we had one night, I had asked the crowd, you know, how many in here have, you know, we spent $300 million on Health and Human Services. How many in here has used a county doctor or county dentist or used any of the county services? And there was one hand that went up in the room. One hand out of, I don't know, there's probably 200 people there. So I'm thinking, okay, I need to find out what bang for the buck we're getting there. Now, I can't tell you right now. I'm not in the middle of it, so I don't know what we're getting, but I just by my one little interaction with that crowd, it didn't seem like there's a whole lot of services being rendered for what is being paid. So I know there is a lot of middle management, you know, from the, you know, the nurse that's given the COVID vaccine at the county, you know, county health agency to her boss, the department head. There seems to be a lot of people in between there. I don't know how many of those people we need. I don't know. I have to, you know, definitely have to get in there and look into it. I was a little bit surprised this year that the county auditor, who our auditor resigned, and now there's somebody running unopposed. So, you know, I mean, we need to, and I don't know who that person is. I have no idea. I don't know. I think her name is Short. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know. I don't even know if it's a her. Is it? I think it's a her.
A lady, yeah. Yeah.
So
a short.
I don't know if she's good, bad, or indifferent. I have no idea. I don't know anything about her. But I and we probably won't know anything about her because there's not going to be any debates. There's not going to be any forums. There's not going to be any questions because nobody's running against her. So, you know, I'm stepping up to the plate here and running for Board of Supervisors. We've got a bunch of school boards, fire boards, water boards that are coming up here and in November. It's time for a lot of people to step up to the plate and get involved.
And that's the school boards, they can start signing up with the Registrar of Voters in June, latter part of June or July.
Yep. Yep.
It's a very short window, so get signed up then because you go onto the ballot for November.
Yeah. I really think every race should have at least two people in there and you know,
minimum.
See, yeah, exactly, and see what you believe. Because again, this short, I have no idea. I mean, she may be the greatest in the world. She may be the worst. I don't know. And we won't know until after she's elected because there's nobody, there's no forums, there's no debates, there's no choice. It's just that's, mm-hmm. She's running unopposed. And I mean, and good for her. I have nothing against her. I mean, good for her, but bad for the public. Bad for nobody else stepping forward.
Yeah, you know, I think that that's a great point. And it brings us to another point because we're hearing a lot of talk about, you know, there's people who are establishment candidates and people who are non-establishment candidates. And I think that that's I think there's been a lot of talk about that. The establishment candidates claim to be public servants, although we're finding most of the candidates that are out there that are with the establishment have been appointed.
Yep.
Or have ran, as you said, unopposed.
Everyone in the group of non-establishment, so to speak, every one of them has ran against a candidate that has been an incumbent that was appointed to their position, every one of them. You know,
yeah.
Superintendent of schools, a district attorney, the sheriff, register or voters, clerk, they all were appointed. And then they can run as an incumbent after they're appointed. And that's how we've done things in Shasta County for years and years and years and years. You know, if you're a supervisor and you decide you're not going to run again, hey, pick your hand-picked replacement first, get him to run, you know, and then step out of the race when there's only one candidate in the race. Now your buddy takes your seat and he doesn't have any opposition.
Or you run and you win and then you decide to retire.
Well, that's how you do on, yeah, that's how you do the other ones and you appoint them, yeah.
That's
yeah.
it, Wim.
So,
yeah.
You know, we've done that forever. And you know, we've let the good old boys network control this county forever. And you know, shame on them, but shame on us. Shame on us for not stepping forward. Shame on us for not having enough candidates to step forward and say, okay, I'm gonna try to fix this. I'm gonna try to do something about this. So, you know, we complain that that's the way things have gone on around here forever, but who stepped forward to try to stop it?
Well, there's been a lot of things. Wynn and I have talked about Mother's Day Sunday and maybe not doing a program, and Wynn I know has some things planned with his family, but I talked to Sal this morning. I'm thinking about doing something on Mother's Day, and that's to bring in an attorney here who's a local attorney in town that has found Brady violations. There's Brady violations against the DA's office. Stephanie Bridget was appointed and ran unopposed. There's been so much corruption in the DA's office that people have found. Also, the conviction rate is 45%, and we just got the information from the Superior Court of California. Mm-hmm. So we just got that information. And the thing is that, for example, yesterday she made the comment about how 100% of the people in her office are behind her. Well, number one, they're probably scared to death of what she'd do to them if in fact.
Right.
You know, they were opposed to her. They also talk about how, you know, all these people are really backing her, how it wouldn't even function unless she was there. Well, what does that say about your training? And also, nobody's mentioned the fact that 17 of those prosecutors quit.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, when she first took over, they were not all happy at
no.
all. It was very dysfunctional, and a vast majority of them quit. Now she has filled it with positions that apparently filled it with people that like her, you know, and they seem to be happy with her. Well, you know, I don't know who was right, the current assistant DAs or the ones that were there before that ended up quitting because they were so miserable. So I don't know, you know, but...
Well, Brady violations are Brady violations.
Brady violations are,
you know,
yes.
And I mean, there's just been a gob of things that have gone on. I mean, there is.
And what about the conviction rate being so low?
45%.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at that in felonies, I mean, it's just unheard of when it's, what, 93 or 90 to 97 in the state of California. And a lot of it has to, and I know a couple of cases I just heard of, the judge even said, hey, wait a second, you can't upcharge them with this. Now, I know this doesn't have a lot to do with, you can't upcharge the defendant like they did. They even threw that one out. But the thing is that I know this doesn't have a lot to do with the supervisors, but then again it does.
Yeah, a long time ago a guy,
then again it does.
A boss told me, figures don't lie, but liars figure. So,
yeah.
And you know, when you look at, she's reported some conviction rates. Well, if you take the red light traffic cameras, that's considered a conviction rate. You know, I mean, if you plead, you know, guilty to a parking ticket, that's considered a conviction. So you can massage those numbers to reflect a better outlook for you. But when you get the numbers from the Superior Court, the ones that we care about, the ones that are actually went to a courthouse and these are, you know, Superior Court, so these are probably felonies or heavy misdemeanors. When you get those figures and you throw out the red light traffic cameras and the parking tickets and everything else, well then, yeah, it's not so impressive.
Don't forget those people who don't fasten their seatbelt. They're a menace to society.
And talk on a cell phone.
Oh!
And, yeah, and God forbid you put up a garden shed that's over 10 feet by 12 feet. And
you know, yeah. I think a lot of this, you know, a lot of this to where being a supervisor and being in a position to where you're not only establishing protocol for it, you're really establishing something new. The things you're talking about, the term limits, the idea of creating ordinances to protect our people and to protect our land, to protect people against fires. I think all this stuff is something that's innovative, and again, it goes back to the non-establishment candidates like yourself.
Well, those are accountability factors, right there.
Yes, they are.
They're measurable. You have to have metrics that are measurable to be able to account for. And justify your position as a board of supervisors saying, no, we did this, we're moving forward with it, and whether you're forcing accountability on county staff, county elected officials, or state staff and state elected officials, or federal staff and federal officials, you're going to be doing that by some of the things that you're talking about.
And one of the things I want to do on the county, which is a pretty small thing, but I think it'll give some big results, is, you know, I've talked about it before, I want to put a receipt at every county counter that you get a receipt at. So whether it's a marriage license, a passport, a building permit, whatever the case it may be. When you get a receipt, at the bottom of that receipt, I wanted to say, how did we do? Please go to this website.
Yeah.
Let us know how we did. Report, you know, tell us good, bad, different, rate us, please.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want a copy of those compliments and complaints to go to each board of supervisor, the CAO, and then that department head from that department. Now, again, it's not a got you. I'm not going after, you know, employees. I don't want to, you know, get a bunch of people in trouble. That's not what I'm looking for. For instance, right now I've been spending a lot of time in the Register of Voters office, obviously the county clerk's office, because I've been, you know, pulling paperwork and filing forms and doing all sorts of stuff. Every time I'm in there, those people have treated me fantastic. I was in there one day, and I still owe this lady some flowers, I think, but I get a little coughing fit. I get a little dry throat, and I get a little coughing fit while I'm behind the plexiglass, and the lady's helping me. And I'm like, oh, darn it, you know, and I mean, and here this lady in the, here's me in the next office over, the next little cubicle over, and she comes out with a little Dixie cup of water and passes it through the fence, you know, the glass to
the
me.
Fence,
I mean,
is
yeah. But I mean, it was like, oh my gosh, bless your heart, you know, I mean, and it's like, I need to bring that lady some flowers or something, because that was so nice and so sweet. But, you know, so again, when I had left there, when I got my, you know, whatever I'd gotten and got my little receipt for it, I would have gladly went to a website and said, hey, whatever you're doing in that office, please keep it up. You know, your human resources, your training, your hiring process is fantastic. Those, and a lot of times I'll have to wait, you know, I'll have to sit there and wait, while she's gathering up something that I need or whatever. So I'll be off to the side and just, but I'm kind of paying attention and I'm watching other people interact. And again, everybody ends up, sometimes they have to come back because they didn't bring something right or whatever, but everybody ends up leaving there and they all seem to be, have a smile on their face and a good mood. They were treated properly. They were treated like customers. Excuse me. I wouldn't change anything in that office as far as they go. Our records department, same thing. Went in there and got a birth certificate, same thing. Those people were fantastic. I dealt with the one that was getting me my birth certificate. The next lady over recognized my last name. Her dad and my dad were friends. Went there with my boy a little bit later, got his, got a different lady. She was fantastic. So for those people, keep up the good work.
Yes.
You're doing great.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Need that water.
I know. Where's my lady from records? Or from the clerk's office.
Yeah.
But, you know, but then I, on the campaign trail, I hear horror story after horror story after horror story. And some of these, you know, planning departments and building departments, and, I mean, the rigmarole they put them through. Well, I haven't experienced that personally, so I'll keep an open mind. I've yet to hear how great some of the experiences were, so maybe there is some out there. I don't know. But if that's the case, you know, the person at the counter, I want the culture to change. If there's a counter out there where we're harassing citizens, first of all, when they walk through the door, that's a customer. That's a customer. I've been doing customer service for 40 years. That's a customer. Treat them as a customer. They're here for, they need something, and you're here to help them. So help them get whatever they need. Number two, that's a tax-paying citizen. You're tax-funded. That's kind of your quasi-boss. So treat them accordingly. And that's what I want. I want that culture to change in some of those departments. Again, I haven't experienced it myself. I'm going to go in with an open mind. Maybe I'm wrong, but I am hearing horror story after horror story. I mean, some of the stories I'm hearing out there are just absolutely ridiculous. I just heard one, a lady called me not too long ago, and she talked about her brother, I think, and he had a deck that didn't have a permit on it, and so while they're flying the drone over, they're finding all this other stuff, so they ask him, well, what's this structure on your property? He says, he's looking, and he says, that's my wood pile. And they said, well, it's got a roof on it. He goes, well, yeah, I put something over to keep the rain off my firewood. Well, that's considered a structure. And he's like, well, it's a couple T-posts and, you know, sheet of plywood and a tarp. I mean, it's just a cover. Nope, it's a structure. He's like, oh, for crying out loud. So while he's trying to get into compliance, he takes the cover off because apparently, you know, if the county considers that a structure, then I'll just take the cover off, let my firewood get wet. Well, then they asked him, what happened to the structure? He says, I took the cover off the firewood. You had a problem with it. Did you have a demolition permit? Because you took down the structure. I mean, it's like, people.
Yeah.
These are citizens here. They're taxpaying citizens. And what really irritates me is you're flying your drone over there to this taxpaying citizen's house to harass him over a deck or a wood pile or whatever the case may be, a garden shed that's too big. But you're ignoring large-scale marijuana grows. You're ignoring transient camps. Transient camps are horrible for our environment. I've cleaned up a couple on Cottonwood Creek, and, I mean, some of the stuff is just so disgusting. I won't even talk about it on the radio, but it's like the trash and the litter it's just a mess. And you're ignoring all that, but you're worried because this guy put a cover on his firewood. You know, we need to get our priorities straightened out. We need to change our priorities and go after some actual issues and problems and fix those rather.
And the reason they're worried about that is those two permits, the one to either erect it or to demolish it, require fees.
Yep.
A tax.
A friend of mine that I worked with 35 years ago had two pieces of property up by Lake Macomber, and he sold one of them to a young couple that's building a house. So they pulled a building permit. They cut in a road. They poured a foundation, and something happened. They had a baby or something, and they decided they weren't going to be able to build a house for whatever reason. So they gave him back the property, and they pulled the building permit. So he goes in there to clean things up, and he put some gravel on the road that they had cut in, you know, to make the road a little bit nicer. And he's out there working, and here comes the county. And you don't have a grading permit. He says, I'm not grading. They said, well, yeah, you are. This road was cut in before me. I just put gravel on it. They said, well, gravel is earthen material, and it's been moved, so therefore you're grading. And he's like, okay, and they said, and the building permit's been pulled on this property, so you have to take out everything that was put in under that permit, the foundation, everything. And he says, how do you take out a road? I'm going to have to take out a road that was cut in here because somehow I have to take out everything on here. Eventually, what ended up happening is he paid $400 and they went away. And I said, basically, they extorted $400 out of you and made you go, you know, made your problem go away. And it's like, hey, we just got to stop that. How did we get to that point? You know, I talked to some people from Tehama County the other day, and one of them, won't mention his name, but they cut in a window and a bar. They cut in a window so it'd look out over the street. So as they're cutting in the window, Tehama County Code Enforcement came up apparently and said, hey, you're supposed to have a permit for to put that window in there. Here's your permit. You know, now you're good. And walked away. Didn't charge him, didn't red tag it, didn't harass him, just here's your permit and you're good. And then there was another lady at the same luncheon that said, yeah, the same thing happened to her. She said, Tehama County is so much easier to work with than Shasta County. And she said the same thing. They'd done something, put in something, and they came by and gave him a permit for it so that they wouldn't be in trouble or whatever. It's like we've got to change this county to be back like that.
Well, I know when you're talking about people being screwed over by the planning department or whoever, you know, building process and all that. I was an appraiser for 9 years at the county with the assessor's office, and I would go out and I would see properties on a regular basis because that was my job. I was out in the field. That's my job. I'd go out and we'd look at the properties because you can't appraise a property from a photograph, and you can't do it from your desk. You have to go out and walk the dirt. You have to go check it out or walk the fence line. And there were many times that I go out there, people would complain about exactly what you're talking about. They're talking about one guy had a brand new building that he put up, and it was a barn, and it was just to store hay, much like your guy with the wood. And because it was rural, it's out in around mountain, out there off a dirty, nasty old road, and you bounce around to get up there. I mean, it's definitely not a heavily traveled road. And it was the structure was in the middle of his 300-acre parcel that he had there. And so you bounce out there, and I called him, met him, and he let me come out there and check it out. Well, no big deal. Okay, it's just a pole barn, and it's got metal roof. It's good to go. And all he's doing is storing hay there to feed his cattle that range out there. And he had to tear that down to get a permit to re-erect it. How much did that cost him? And he was ticked. He showed me the paperwork. I saw it. I saw it firsthand. And I saw the dialogue that he had from them with emails. He was ticked. So I did what I could on my end, and I contacted the supervisor, and that was Pam Giacomini at the time. And I contacted her and told her what was going on because she is a cattlewoman up there in Hat Creek, and she owns big parcel out there. And I know that she happens to have some property structures that may or may not be, you know, legit. But she's got an old ranch. Well, this guy had part of an old ranch. So why? And this all preceded 1973 when permits were required.
Yeah.
So why are they doing that to these people? They go out there with their drones and they find something and they red tag them.
Money. And I was here.
Yeah, exactly. It all goes back to money.
I was here in 1973, and I don't remember walking down the street and buildings just falling down on people. I really don't remember that happening. So I mean, you know,
most people overbuild their buildings.
If you want them to stay there, exactly. That's what's going to happen. Yeah. You know, and again, Tama County, I talked to a guy the other day, and he said that he had put up a barn, basically a barn, and as long as he doesn't put electricity to it, there was no permits required. He put up, you know, it was an ag building, he put it up, and Tama County didn't require permits. So I know, you know, our director here said that, oh, we don't have any other regulations other than what's in the state code. Well, I got news for you. Tama County's in the same state, and if they can do some of these things with handing people permits that put in a window that didn't know they needed one, or somebody putting up a barn without having to get a permit as long as they don't put electricity to it, I'm pretty sure that we do have some extra regulations that we can take a look at and see if we need.
We need to clean all that out.
It
needs a deep scrubbing.
Yeah, one quick other story about that one, because it's just how ridiculous it is. Now, this was in the city of Reading limits, so it was city of Reading, not county. But it's the same type of thing, and I can't fix the city of Reading, but I can fix the county. I can try to fix the county for sure. But a friend of mine he wanted to put in solar, and so they said, what's this permit here? This structure here is unpermitted. What's this structure? He says, it's my garden shed. And they said, well, it's over 10 feet by 12 feet, so you need a permit. And or 12 feet, but yeah, 10 by 12, I think it is. And he says, well, it was a prefabricated garden shed that I bought at Lumber 84, and they're not even business anymore. They said, well, you have to have a permit on it. It's too big, and it needs a permit. He says, okay, well, how do I get a permit then? I'll go through all your hoops. How do I get a permit? And they said, well, you need to submit your plans to the planning department, and they need to be approved. He says, there's no plans. It was prefabricated. Well, then you need to take it to an architect and have an architect draw up plans for your shed. He says, that's going to cost me more than the shed costs. They said, well, that's what you're going to have to do. Otherwise, we can't put in your solar because you have the shed on your property. So his solution, he emptied the shed out. He took a chainsaw and cut up one side across the roof and down the other side, boarded up the two ends, split them apart, and said, okay, now I'm good. They said, nope, it's not far enough apart. They have to be 12 feet apart. So he had to hook a chain to it and drag it another 5 feet with his truck. Okay, now we're good. Now we can put in your solar because you have two small garden sheds now and they're 12 feet apart or whatever it is. And yeah, I know. You're looking at me dumbfounded.
It's just unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
It is.
How did we get to this point?
Yeah.
How did we get
bureaucracy.
It is bureaucracy. Totally. Exactly, yeah. What it is. Yeah, and so we need to clean a bunch of that up.
Yeah. Holy smoke.
Well, we've got about
2 minutes.
About 2 minutes. So tell people how they can get a hold of you and your last thoughts.
Okay. So I have email is Kelstrom, KELSTROM, the number 4, DIST, the number 5, at yahoo.com. You can call my cell phone, 530-744-4539. I have Facebook pages. I have ChrisKelstrom.com is actually a website. I don't do my own website. I do a little bit on the Facebook pages, but I have other people that do that. My website, I haven't even been on it myself for a month or two, but you can message me through those websites. You can send me an email. You can send me a text. You can call me. So I am easy to get a hold of, and once elected, I will still remain easy to get a hold of. So mm-hmm. I'm not going to hide. I'm not going to go in there and say, hey, see you in 3.5 years when I come out and make a bunch of promises. I will be available. I will be there. I will listen to you. We may not agree, but I will still listen to you. You know, and again, if we don't agree on something, but the majority of my constituents agree with you, then that's the way I will vote. Because as a supervisor, you are a representative of the people, plain and simple. So,
amen.
Yep.
You know, and I think that people need to pay attention to all the people running for supervisor, in that it is 20% of the vote.
Yeah.
You know, it's still going to be 20%.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if three of you get together, that's 60%, and that's enough.
Yeah.
That's right. That's enough to pass anything. So I think the one last thing in parting, is there any types of events or any type of meet and greets or anything that you have coming up in the near future?
So we just had a fundraiser last night for another candidate, and I had mine a week before that. So right now, I think May 11th, I think mm-hmm. I have a little debate forum with the Republican Women's Group at Gold Hills.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so other than that, and of course the Cottonwood Rodeo is coming up. So
yes.
I will be emceeing the Kitty Parade. I was going to MC the regular parade, but instead I'm going to be riding in a 1969 Roadrunner from a fellow a Chamber of Commerce member, and then I will be at the rodeo probably both days. So
there you go.
I will be there.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Well, we've been here with Chris Kellstrom. He's running for District 5 Supervisor in Shasta County. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
You, guys.
Appreciate you, brother.
Yep.
Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
Jefferson State of Mind.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.